It's hour number three of First Up here on TSN 1050. It's brought to you by LeaseBusters. Corona Koliakovo with you. We'll talk to Ryan Hollins in about 10 minutes, longtime NBAer, about all the action last night that saw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and OKC throttle Luka and the Mavs. No surprise seeing Boston beat up on Cleveland. And then when do Minnesota and Denver play again? I think it's Friday, game three, which is a very long break between, I think they played on Sunday.
Why is that?
Friday? I mean, it's been, they played on Monday night, and then that's when Minnesota won to go 2-0, and then they play again on Friday night. So 4 days off? Like, what are they doing there in the NBA? I don't know. That's, I suppose, good
news
for Minnesota.
Does travel have anything to do with it? No, Minnesota-Denver is not that far.
I wouldn't
think
so.
Maybe it's building availability. Well, yeah, it is building availability because the Colorado Avalanche are playing.
But this is in Minnesota game number three, so I don't, unless the Minnesota Wild are suiting up in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But
but Colorado's coming home for 3-4, so maybe Denver's availability coming back might be something that the Nuggets struggle with, which is why they're maybe trying to balance this out a bit. I don't know, but 4 days between games doesn't make sense in playoffs.
No, it kills the whole momentum of the series. Like, if I'm Minnesota, I'm like, let's play again tonight. Let's play back-to-back here. Let's just keep it going because they're playing really well. We'll talk to Ryan Hollins about that. Jamal Murray avoids suspension somehow, even though he threw a heating pad at an official. I think if that's the regular season, he's getting a long suspension. But yeah, it's the playoffs. Kidding. He got a $100,000 fine, which I'm sure he could find in his pockets because he is very well compensated. He's an NBA player. That's how it generally works. In the NHL tonight, it's game one between Edmonton and Vancouver. And we know the song La Bamba, you know, Para Bailar La Bamba.
Yeah, that's a song
used to sing that in grade 12 Spanish class at Thornley Secondary School.
Isn't that the song the Oilers play when they score at home?
It is, and it's done in honor of Joey Moss, their longtime locker room attendant. And they play La Bamba to celebrate wins. And the Edmonton Opera released their own version of La Bamba, which features the names of Oilers players and little jokes about their performances on the ice. It's a little cringy. Why don't we take a listen?
We will be playing La Bamba. 16 wins with La Bamba is necessary. Oilers Nation is ready. Oilers Nation is ready. With Skinny and Ned Leon's one-time repping. I and don't forget Hyman. He's parked in front. He's parked in front and on the hunt.
You know the Oilers are ready.
Yes, I love this, man.
He's parked in front. He's parked in front. His goals are generally from like 6 inches up outside of the
In and around the crease.
I love it. The dirty areas. For a second.
He uses every part of his body to put goals in the net, except for his nose.
Yeah, exactly. Can we hear the second part of that? We kind of stopped playing that, Chrissy. Can we cue up the second singer there? We heard the first guy.
You know the Oilers are ready. You know McDavid is ready. Your coffee.
Wow, hit that high C.
Oh, yes.
So, explain to me again how this was created.
It's the Edmonton Opera.
Oh, the Edmonton Opera created this.
Yeah, well, I mean, wow. I don't think an average person can hit that high register.
Wow, hit that high C.
That's great. If only nice. The Toronto Maple Leafs had a song like that. Remember Al's brother did.
I was going to say, Al's brother did the shanty.
He let us down. That lazy SOB couldn't come up with a song for the Leafs, and that's why they're out.
To you.
What?
I actually forgot how that song went. Okay. That's why he didn't come up with another one. Good call. What?
So that was the like the house version that or whatever rap version he created for it. I don't even know if that is rap version. What
Al's
would you
brothers,
call that?
Al's brother's like biological brother is a rapper. His name's Christian DiStefano. Kid's a stud.
Really?
Much unlike his older bro, Al's brother. But,
okay.
And I think he helped him produce that song.
Because the shanty was like more of like a...
Yeah. And then that was Justin Bieber's Baby, right? With the Maple Leafs version. I don't know, Chris, if you have any longer...
Oh, Baby, yes. Here's the shanty.
That's the shanty.
There
yes.
once was a team called the Maple Leafs. Their season was great and full of glee. They scored a bunch of goals and broke records, but now's the true exam. When will the Maple Leafs end the drought and
that's
win
pretty good.
The cup?
That one's good that versus one's good. This other one. This,
do you have
this
the other one too,
one.
Chrissy? I think maybe we don't have that one ready, but yeah, that Nylander.
Yes.
Nylander.
Yes. That the shanty was way better than that one. But
I
on,
like
how
the
about
bomb
the
best.
How about the song we created with Joseph Wall?
It's true. Another
right?
great game by Wall. That was
all
good too.
All in all, it's just another great game by Wall.
Yeah.
Man,
and then
who would have?
And then he just
where would
play.
We be today if this guy played in Game 7?
The Leafs probably are in the second round.
I'm literally 1,000,000% convinced that if Joseph Wall would have played Game 7, the Leafs would have won that game.
I don't
disagree. We'd be jamming to this another great game by Wall song. Jamming to it. Instead, we're here talking about this team breaking up. Crazy.
Could be. Management speaks Friday at 10:30 a.m. Keith Pelly, the CEO, Brendan Shanahan, Brad Tree Living. So we're looking forward to that.
The
and
Friday
what could
dump.
Come.
That's the, what it's called.
The Friday dump. Maybe yep. they talk. If they talk about running it back, I'm just going to turn off my TV.
How do you? Here's what I'm trying to ask you. What do you see differently happening?
I want a new coach at least. Give us
like,
something different.
If
here.
These three guys are all speaking at the podium, you think what? Like, you think they're going to stand at the podium and say, "Well, yeah, this guy's not coming back. Yeah. Well, that guy's
no,
not
I
coming
don't.
Back."
And it's a lot easier just to be to speculate on the futures of guys like Marner and Tavares. Who have no trade clauses. You don't know who is interested in them yet. You don't know what the possibilities are with trades or buyouts or whatever it is. It's still a long way away. So, yeah, they're not going to have any clarity on that. But I would imagine we'll have some clarity in the coach. Unless like they say, oh, we're still evaluating. Or maybe they say Sheldon Keefe's coming back. I don't know.
Well, because here's the thing. If they come out and say they're still evaluating, this is the difficulty about waiting too long to make this decision. One, you basically screw your coach that you have right now because you don't allow him a fair opportunity to go and explore everything else that's out there. Two, maybe the guy that you have targeted is not available out there. Or you don't, like, because say what you want. If Brad Brindamore becomes available, I think the Maple Leafs make a strong push. If John Cooper becomes available, I think he's priority number one. But what if they're what if Joe Quenneville's on their list and they're waiting for league approval? Because those are three guys right now that are can't miss guys that you should make a move on. I mean, Berube's supposed to be in New Jersey from all speculation that we hear. After that, is Todd McClellan a guy for you?
You know my
Gerard
guy.
Gerard Gallant, Daryl
you know
Sutter is Daryl
Sutter
going to return to the NHL?
Should
I mean. I don't know.
Daryl, my guy. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll find out Friday.
Daryl to me would be a guy that you make an in-season change with. Not a guy that you make a change for now.
Would AK don't the mentor still be correct if there was an in-season change? If Keith Ford be fired next season in the middle of the season and then Daryl Sutter takes over? Would AK the mentalist be...
No, because you considered... said it would happen on the day. If you're convinced, maybe you should change your AK the mentalist stance and saying, the next coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs will be Daryl Sutter. And I'm not saying when it'll happen, but if there is going to be a change, it will be him. You don't predict the date, but you said
yes.
It's going to happen Friday.
I'm sticking with my prediction, and then I will amend it if I need to, because okay. That's what AK the mentalist does.
Okay. So you're saying on Friday they're going to announce Daryl Sutter.
That's my prediction, based on literally nothing other than my own hopes and speculations.
Your own mentalist.
I'm not an insider.
Ways.
We'll ask yes. Scott Hartnell what he thinks of that. Scotty, he's been
I'm not
around
bring
the NHL
Scar
forever.
Hartnell on and ask him who the next coach of the Maple Leafs is.
Nah, maybe not that, but who he thinks could be a good fit if they do decide to move on from Sheldon Keefe. Also, his thoughts on how the Leafs should proceed here in the offseason, the roster construction. And his impression of what went down against the Boston Bruins over 7 games. That's in about 30 minutes. On the other side, we'll talk some hoops with Ryan Hollins. Look back on last night. Look ahead to tonight. And the idea of Jamal Murray avoiding a suspension. Hey, just send us $100,000 and you're all good, Jamal. He's like, great. Thank you very much. Because that's pretty much what went down. Ryan Hollins is next. First Up continues. This is hour three of the show. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Colaiacovo. If you are going to roll into an NBA playoff game looking like you jumped into a pile of peanut butter, lathered your entire body in it, and that's how you dress, you better be putting up a big game. That's exactly what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did yesterday.
Is it peanut butter color or mustard color?
No, I think it's a peanut. It's like peanut butter. So it looks like a big jar of Skippy he jumped into.
Skippy?
Yeah, Skippy peanut butter. Is that
or
what
Jif.
People have?
Maybe Jif peanut butter.
Jif, yeah, whatever it was. Gilgeous-Alexander, the fit was questionable. The performance was not. He was outstanding for Oklahoma City. We love him. He's the pride of Hamilton, Ontario. Another guy we love is Ryan Hollins, longtime NBA, who makes his return to First Up now. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Good, good. How you guys doing?
Excellent, thank you. Do you recall a time in your NBA career where you had an outfit on when you were walking into the arena? Maybe it was during the playoffs, maybe it was during the regular season, where you're like, this might be pushing it a little bit, might be a little bit too outlandish, or does that simply not exist for someone as stylish as you?
I wouldn't consider myself stylish at all.
Just trying to pump your tires here, Ryan. Come on.
Pushing it? No, I'm not a push it type of guy. I didn't want that attention. When you're a role player in the league, your job is to kind of do your job. I didn't want to be standing out for anything like that. I was just trying to maintain employment.
How much is that talked about in the room with the guys? Because it seems like the fashion, being like a fashion icon, is a very important thing in the NBA these days. And what Gilgeous-Alexander was wearing, I probably had that sent to me 15 times by my friend saying, we need to bet his unders. No one wearing an outfit like that can possibly perform well in an NBA game. Of course he did. But I'm sure in the room, like, the boys were talking about that, right?
I see for Shai, where his swagger is, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, those guys, they can wear what they want, and you just kind of accept what they have. It's like it's fashion. It's like art now at this point. But I've seen, I'm pretty confident this had to happen with Shai. If a guy comes in wearing something wild enough, they'll take his outfit out, and they'll actually hang it on a hanger on the board.
I love that.
The guy comes back and his outfit will be hanging on the board forever for everybody. So I have seen that happen in moments. I don't think with Shai that happens when you're playing as well as he is. And, you know, he's kind of a fashion icon at this point, you know, as much as even bigger than the NBA.
And he was amazing last night again. OKC beating Dallas in game number one. Gilgeous-Alexander was 29-9-9 in the big win. Another Canadian, big part of the NBA story these days, Jamal Murray. His Denver Nuggets are down 2-0 to Minnesota, and I thought he was going to be suspended for at least game three for throwing that heat pad at an official. Somehow avoids the suspension. Were you surprised that he did?
No, not at all. I think the fine was enough. This is the first time doing something like that. And then, I mean, you'd absolutely, you know, put an end to the Nuggets. If he doesn't play, and then be into the series. So I think it's very fair. If he does something again, I think he is going to miss games, possibly multiple games. I'm sure Jamal has been told how silly a move that was, even though frustration had really set in. And to me, the bigger picture here is how quickly you can go from hero to villain. He hit those big shots against the Lakers. Everybody heralded him, you know, talked about the work that he did. And all of a sudden it's going, what is wrong with you, man? And you just see the emotions of the NBA playoffs and how they can sway from literally game to game.
So, Ryan, let's look at the NBA playoffs. How are the Denver Nuggets down 2-0? To the Minnesota Timberwolves? Are we watching a superstar blossom right before our eyes with Anthony Edwards, the way he's basically taken over this playoffs and leading the Minnesota Timberwolves?
One, the Nuggets are getting out-nuggeted.
Nice.
the Timberwolves are bigger. They're physical. They play together, and they really pride themselves on the defensive end. And normally, those are things that, you know, the Nuggets have come out and beat people doing, playing that style. And you're absolutely seeing a star being born in Anthony Edwards. And the biggest notch or challenge we've seen, as you want to appoint, you know, Zion as the next or Ja Morant as the next face of these guys, they haven't really been able to win at a young age. So Anthony Edwards is not just young. He's in a position where he can win. And you can say he's the best player on that ball club. You know, he's got, definitely has the most talent. So that's why everybody's excited about him. And if the success continues in Minnesota, he's definitely the next superstar and guy. But the big component, we said, what, fellas, you got to win. And we're seeing that with Anthony Edwards so far. And they're up 2-0 on the defending champs.
Ryan Hollins, longtime NBAer, is our guest here on First Stop. It's very rare to accomplish things in the NBA playoffs that guys like Michael Jordan or LeBron James or the greatest of all time have never done. But Jalen Brunson became the first player in NBA history with 40 or more points and 5 or more assists in 4 straight playoff games. He has been absolutely incredible. And as great as Anthony Edwards has been, I would argue that Jalen Brunson has been as good, if not better, for New York, who played Game 2 tonight against Indiana. Who saw this coming from Jalen Brunson, where he leaves Dallas, heads to New York, where a lot of people were questioning the contract? He has emerged as an unquestioned superstar as well, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely. And to do it in New York is the sweetest thing because, you know, think about it, Carmelo was on paper a much bigger star, high draft pick, hey, on the pace of being, you know, challenging as one of the better players to ever play. You know, these writers, it's him and LeBron James. It's him and Dwayne Wade. And Carmelo got to New York and it couldn't work. As great as Carmelo is, and you're going, man, this, you know, bad built 6'2 guy is going to take the Knicks to the promised land. And right now, Jalen Brunson is. So hats off to Jalen Brunson, man. He's an absolute baller. I think it's just a real nod to hard work. Hard work paying off, and he plays and does things the right way. So I love what we're seeing from Jalen Brunson, but he doesn't look physically, he doesn't have the accolades, he doesn't look like these stars, he doesn't have the 40-inch vertical, you know, he hasn't been just a star from day one, he doesn't shoot the ball from half court like Curry, you know, he's really a throwback, man. And I remember playing against his father, and the one thing that he's really gleaned from his father, man, is he's tough as nails, dude, and New York is winning tough basketball games, and that really starts with Brunson, so he's showing toughness and hard work really come back in the NBA.
Ryan, this is a two-part question. Do you believe the Knicks have enough to be a championship contender and maybe win it? And do you think the Boston Celtics, do you think they can win without Porzingis in their lineup?
I don't think the Knicks have enough on one hand. But I think if there was ever a year for the Knicks to win the championship, is this year. Giannis is out. Damian Lillard was hurt. Embiid was hobbled, as you just noted. Porzingis hurt. There are, like, injuries across the board. Jimmy Butler was hurt. All these guys are hurt, right? Like, this is, if there's a year, New York, go. It ain't perfect. You don't have Julius Randle, right? But, like, go. Like, this is a year, right? And the Celtics do have enough. They're that deep between Derek White, Jalen Brown. You got to mention Derek White right now with Jalen Brown and Jason Tatum because he's playing that darn good, man. Just Boston is good. But the thing that scares you about Boston, they rely on the three-point shot. They play a lot of one-on-one. And there are moments where they're like Jekyll and Hyde, and you're like, who is this team? Who they can look like it's crazy. The craziest thing I've seen, guys. They can look like just absolutely unstoppable, and then they look pedestrian, and you're like, who is this team? And what happens is a lot of what they do is predicated on the three ball. So if you can, don't get me wrong, it's a long list. If you can score the basketball against their switching, you can defend the three ball, and you can defend the one-on-one from Tatum and Brown, and you lock in and don't let Derrick White be an X factor, you got a shot against Boston. So I don't think they're unbeatable, but you can't let them. There's two different teams. You got to get that bad team to show up on the floor.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing finish to these NBA playoffs because I think there's a bunch of teams that are more than capable of contending for an NBA title. It's a matter of who can stay healthy and who can get it done in the big moments. And tonight we will see game number 2 between Indiana and New York as the Knicks look to go up 2-0 on the Pacers. Ryan, awesome to have you back on the show. We really appreciate it. And do not sell your fashion sense short. You're a very fashionable man and a terrific broadcaster. Thank you for the time.
Appreciate you guys, man.
All right. That is Ryan Hollins, our boy. We love Ryan Hollins on First Up. And I thought it was really interesting what he said about Gilgeous Alexander and just how he's emerged here, right? It's SGA. It's Brunson. It's
Edwards.
Anthony Edwards. I mean, these guys are all just unbelievable. Luka Doncic did not look great last night at all, but it's wild, man. It is wild in the NBA, the star power at the top. And then you look at what the Toronto Raptors have or don't have. Good luck. Good luck. It's going to be a while. It's going to be a while here. And it could be a while for the Toronto Blue Jays until they win another game. Because it's likely not happening today against the Phillies. We'll take you back to last night. Did not go well for Toronto. We'll let you hear from John Schneider, who's booted from the game. Scott Hartnell also still to come. Scott Hartnell, in 10 minutes, I need to issue an apology to Cameron Critchlow, who is a PEI boy who is actually playing for Great Britain at the World Hockey Championships.
No way.
You'll be doing Cameron's game on Saturday morning on TSN. I did say that Great Britain was going to get slaughtered by Canada, which may be the case. And I did wonder if Harry Kane was playing for their hockey team, which is probably not the case. But Cameron, we are big supporters of Cameron. And a good Canadian boy playing for Great Britain. Hopefully he has a strong performance. Maybe you'll give him a shout-out on the broadcast.
Hell yeah. I would love to do that. And we talked about Great Britain earlier in the show. And I remember back in 2021 at the World Championships, they celebrated their first ever win in regulation against Belarus.
Ooh.
It was a 4-3 victory. I remember that game, some of the celebrations. And I tell you what, man, like, given my own experience about playing in the World Hockey Championships, I wish I would have played another couple years and had the opportunity. I know early in my career in Toronto, you know, given the fact that we weren't a playoff team, I was presented the opportunity multiple times. But unfortunately, I wasn't healthy enough, you know, during those times because I needed to address, you know, knee concerns and concussion concerns. And it's kind of a sad regret for me because my one experience that I did have there in 2011 was an incredible one. I loved it. And, you know, you see, and this is one thing that I really hope hockey fans get a chance to experience and appreciate. Like, go watch hockey being played in Europe. It's a completely different animal compared to some of the experiences you may, you know, have here in North America because it's an event. Like, it's a concert. Like, there's so much celebration when you're at those games because you see people they're being proud to be from their countries and you have a different viewing experience as a fan because there is that soccer style, you know, atmospheres that are created in the arenas. And the World Championships, it's not like the Olympics where you see these dominant teams prevail almost all the time. Because a lot of the players that play on these teams play on club teams in those countries, and you don't always get the best talent on the power nations or power countries there. And so it makes the competition that's there way more competitive. And that's what I really enjoy about it. And I'm really, really pumped I get the chance to, be part of this broadcast this year and hopefully for the first of many.
It begins on Friday, and your tournament reign begins Saturday morning at 6 a.m., bright and early.
They gave me the pigeon shift.
No. That's where the real ballers go at 6 a.m.
The 6 a.m. shift.
Huge ratings for those games. And I'm a little bit concerned about Blue Jays ratings here going forward. Actually, I'm not. It's a Rogers property. Who cares? But for my own viewing habits, it's a tough watch. Seeing this team night after night go up to the plate and produce zero offense. Last night they got bludgeoned by the Philadelphia Phillies, perhaps the best team in Major League Baseball. Their manager, John Schneider, was ejected because of a check swing call that went against the Toronto Blue Jays. He was going mental. He was screaming. And if you're a lip reader, ooh, cover your eyes, because there was some foul language from one John Schneider, the manager of the Jays. Here he is talking about his ejection.
I thought Schwarber swung on the pitch that hit him, obviously. You know, I just felt bad for Hosey. Should have been out of the inning after he struck Witt out. That's it. That was it. Judgment call. I thought he swung, and he thought he didn't.
Ah, Johnny. The end of days.
He obviously didn't sound like he was upset as he looked when he got tossed out of that game. And
oh, he was so angry.
I mean, you feel for John Schneider, because you can clearly understand there is fumes coming out of his ears, and it's steam, built up steam, anger steam, because of how frustrated it must be for him answering the same questions every day, up with different solutions every day to try to get players that are expected to go out and perform not to perform. And maybe last night was a tipping point where he just said, enough's enough, I'm gonna blow some steam here and let everything out. But then he's also reminded after the game too, it's like, hey, don't go across the line too much, you know, you gotta make sure we tempers the emotions around here, because we're feeling the heat a little bit. Don't make it worse than it already looks. And look, it's not an easy job that he has right now, because clearly the roster that he's been given to manage wasn't good enough to end last season, wasn't good enough to start this season, and is still not good enough. So
yeah,
there's only so much you can do.
His best players have been total stiffs through 35 games.
Minus the pitchers.
Yeah, I would say Gausman and Bassett still have ERAs over 5. I mean, it's not like they've been exceptional either. I know Gausman had the late start to spring, but their bullpen's been horrible, amongst the worst in Major League Baseball. Kikuchi, Berríos save last night have been great, but yeah, there's not a lot of good stuff going. I don't even know how they're only 4 games under 500. It seems like they should be way worse, way worse. So I suppose you could look at that as a bright spot. But you talked about how Schneider has been answering the exact same questions again and again and again. Well, last night he was asked about the missed opportunities from the Toronto Blue Jays. Here's what he said.
You know, Izzy gets a hit, you know, KK walks, bad timing on the double play from George, you know, that stuff happens. But, yeah, I think that game could have swung back, you know, to, kind of back and forth, I think, right there. And we didn't take advantage of it.
How far away do you think John Schneider is from going full Jim Montgomery with David Pastrnak? This guy needs to step up. This guy needs to step up. Bo Bichette's hitting 189. This guy led the American League in hits 2 of the last 3 years. He's hitting 189, has 1 home run.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude. Help me out here. Do something.
See, I think he really wants to, but he's being reminded by management not to. Don't you think? Because you're absolutely right. I mean, you don't want to necessarily, as a manager, embarrass your players completely, especially in the public
eye. They're embarrassing themselves.
But you're right. They're embarrassing themselves. And maybe there is a sense of embarrassing them more where they actually do get the message and say, wow, okay. Because maybe right now it's not clicking. Because nobody's doing anything about it. It's like, show up at the ballpark again. If I hit, I hit. If we win, we win. I'll chew my sunflower seeds. I'll chew my tobacco. I'll go eat my nice dinners. I'll wake up.
I'm not really surprised that Springer's struggling, because he's older. And there were signs of that last year. Flatty, I think, is a good hitter, not a great hitter. I think he's probably an 800 OPS guy around there, and he's not that far from that. But Bichette, I'm stunned by. Stunned by, because he's the guy I actually thought there were no questions about. Bo Bichette, he's on your team, he's going to be a stud, and he has been anything but. He's been arguably their worst hitter for, again, we're coming up on 35 games here, and they still do have time, it's true, but look at the AL East. They're 7.5 games behind both the Yankees and the Orioles.
I tell you
what.
7.5
games.
By the end of this week, it could reach 10.
Sure. I mean, you play Philly again, you probably lose today. Their big underdogs today are the Jays, Nola versus Bassett, and then they've got to go to Minnesota, and they'll throw Alek Manoah out there for at least one of those starts. Ooh. That's a loss.
Has Minnesota lost the games since the summer sausage rally?
Yeah, they must have lost a game by now. But Minnesota's good. They're 20-15. They have a really quality offense. They've scored 42 more runs than the Toronto Blue Jays have this year. So it's a tough slog right now to watch and follow.
Well,
the Jays
just,
because you're right, it's the same thing every single day. Why aren't you hitting? What's going on with this bullpen? What are we going to do about it? What changes are you trying to make? And, yeah, you move Bo Bichette down to the cleanup spot. Clearly, that's not going to solve anything. I would flip the batting order. Like, whoever's at the bottom. All right,
from the top to the bottom.
You're starting from the bottom, now we're here. That's right. Just full on Drake. By the way,
that should be their walk-up song.
There was that shooting at Drake's house yesterday, yeah, which is a little scary with this whole rap beef going on. Probably enough with the rap beef. And, you know, once the shootings start, I'm far from an expert on this subject.
Time to cut the cord.
I think that's safe to say. Scotty Hartnell's coming up on the other side. Looking forward to his thoughts on the Leafs, everything in the Stanley Cup playoffs last night. Also, San Jose wins the NHL draft lottery. Macklin Celebrini, we believe, is destined to be a Shark. Hartnell, the sixth overall pick back in the year 2000. Should have been a top three pick. Rick DiPietro went number one. Danny Heatley went number two. Then we should have seen Scotty.
Yeah, but if Hartnell didn't go sixth, he wouldn't have been the natural predator rock star that he was.
That is true. He is a rock star. Now a great hockey analyst. He's up next. Hour 3 continues. You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Colaiacobo. We were just doing a deep dive on the 2000 NHL entry draft, where I think our next guest went at least two picks too low. Should have definitely been a top three pick. Scott Hartnell from the Prince Albert Raiders. We're talking about this because the draft lottery went last night where San Jose privy to the number one overall pick, which we expect to be Macklin Celebrini. Let's welcome in our man Scott Hartnell from the NHL Network. Hello, Scott. How are you?
Great, fellas. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you very much for coming back and joining us on the show. What do you remember about the draft lottery in 2000? Is that something you were dialed into to see where you might be drafted to at that time?
Yeah, well, there was no lottery, I believe, but I think I was rated fifth or fourth, and I had a lot of good interviews with the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I thought for sure they picked number four, so I thought for sure I was going there, and they picked Rostislav Kvesla, and the next pick was the New York Islanders. They just picked DiPietro, number one, and they picked Rafi Torres, number two, and I'll never forget my mom. You know, I sit beside my parents, and all the cameras came around us, and you know they're all dialed in, focused, and I'm like, oh man, I'm going next, right? And they go, oh, from the Ontario Hockey League, Rafi Torres, and all the cameras do a quick 180 and zoom in on Rafi because you know he was a top 5-6 pick as well. And next thing you know, it was, and then I kind of knew I was going next because I had a lot of good interviews with Nashville. I went six overall, so it was kind of hilarious. My mom was just fist pumping that I wasn't going to Long Island.
Yeah, I was going to say, not too shabby to go from Long Island to spending most of your career in Nashville, in Nash Vegas. You helped build that market.
Yeah, it was a cool town, and when I got traded to Philadelphia, it was like every year, every 2 years, you go in, they're like, oh my gosh, there's another hotel here, and then there's new bars going up. There's just abandoned buildings downtown there on Broadway, right? With like rocks thrown in them, and now they're going for like $10 million a piece, and they couldn't give them away back in 2000. So if I would have known what I know now, I would have bought up all of downtown Smashville.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know what to make of the whole draft lottery process, and I know they're trying to make it a made-for-TV event, but what was your reaction to see how the lottery played out yesterday, where literally no team moved any position? You saw San Jose, and good for them, first time ever in franchise history, they get the number one overall pick, and they're likely going to draft a homegrown kid in Macklin Celebrini, but what do you make of the whole draft lottery process to begin with?
Yeah, well, the last couple of years, too, remember, when they went to break thought Columbus's Jaromír Kekäläinen's face when he didn't get that down to the last two teams, right? So there wasn't any hiccups, in that respect of it, but You know, it is what it is, right? They're saying there's always a chance to move up, and last one was pretty blah, if you will. But I don't know if it's a good thing when you get first overall draft pick, but when you're trying to rebuild, it seems like San Jose has been rebuilding for quite a while. So we'll see what happens and see what they can do.
Scott Hartnell, our guest, NHL Network, longtime NHLer. Now, the Toronto Maple Leafs are not entering a rebuild by any stretch, but perhaps a retool, and there's a lot of people calling for the Leafs to break up the core four and try a different approach to roster construction. What did you make of the series against the Boston Bruins, Scott, and how would you recommend the Leafs go from here?
Yeah, it was right there for them, right? I had Leafs in my pool going all the way to the finals, actually, against Edmonton. So I was a little disappointed personally that it blew up my bracket. But they've been kind of running it back, right? What, four or five years in a row here? Everyone makes big money, for their team. So if you can get something big for one of those guys, I think you got to go do it. Free up some cash, cap space, maybe look for another free agent. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Cause what's working or what's been going on hasn't been working, right? It hasn't taken them to the next level. And just seems like, it's like baseball. You get in the playoffs and your bats go cold, or in a series, you can't get runs. You can't get run support for your goaltenders and you're out, right? So it's something needs to happen. I think you can't just keep going back to the well and the same thing happens. So I would say time for a change, but that's just a washed up, NHLer, 17 years saying that.
Scotty, your impression of the playoffs so far? We're in the second round. Which team has impressed you the most, and which team has been the biggest surprise for you?
Well, Avalanche are a heck of a team, right? This is, they're down 3-0. There's no quit in their game, right? And what a goal by a depth player there, Miles Wood, in overtime. I'm interested to see this Vancouver Edmonton series. I usually try to stay up past 10 o'clock to watch these games. Yeah. So I might have a little nap this afternoon to make sure I'm juiced up for that one. So, I'm excited to see, McDavid take on, Pedersen and the Vancouver Canucks. So that's the series for me that I'll be dialed into.
You would have played against the Rangers and the Hurricanes a ton of times in your career, especially when you were with the Philadelphia Flyers. So I'm sure you're kind of cringing watching both teams succeed so far in this postseason. But the way that Jake Guentzel has assimilated himself in the Canes lineup, he scores twice last night. He's been just an unbelievable pickup for Carolina. And like the way that Shesterkin played last night, I think he had 54 saves in that double overtime win where Trocheck scores. What are your impressions of the Rangers as a whole? And they did win the President's Trophy, so clearly they're a really quality hockey team. But how would you compare them to some of the teams maybe out west as far as quality goes?
I think the Rangers are going to be right there at the end of the day. I think they're so deep, right? They got just that MSG. Their building is just absolutely crazy. It's crazy in exhibition. And now it's in the second round of the playoffs, and I don't think anyone left there going into double OT, and, their goal song, and it's just such an incredible atmosphere. And, I love playing there, trying to ruin, New Yorkers' nights, right? That's the whole thing when you get on the road. That's your whole objective, right, is to put a damper on their evening, and they've been feeling it at home, all season long. And, Coach Laviolette, he's got them playing that fun offensive system that, they got the guns to do it, right? Panarin and Zibanejad and Kreider with his speed, and Trocheck's been a beast. So I think the more you look at this team, the more you think that they're the team to beat. So,
Hartsy, you've played your fair share of playoff games, almost 100. Well, you finished at 99. And you've played in some crazy buildings against some, great teams and stuff like that. Do you ever sit back and reflect, where your best playoff moment was and what was your favorite building that gave you the best experience of what playoff hockey is?
Yeah, I lost the game 7 in New York Rangers. That was devastating. Played in the whiteout in Winnipeg. My last season there in 2017, I believe, and that was pretty cool playing in Canada, right? It's just a different level, than playing in the States, but probably number one was, the Chicago, you know, the national anthem when everyone's just cheering in the Stanley Cup Finals in 2010. We never did get a game there. We lost all three games there, but it was, you know, high scoring affair. It was probably my best hockey that I played in that series. And then at home in Philadelphia, obviously it was a pretty cool place to play. They appreciated hard work. They appreciated the guys playing with guts. And that was, you know, kind of what my game was all about. So, it is the best time to watch hockey, you know, not that you just sit on your hands and not watch it during the regular season, but you just can't turn it off for literally, you know, 2 months. So it's pretty incredible to watch these guys battle it out, and, you know, just the preparation for, you know, the trainers and, you know, all the little things, you know, behind the scenes, right? It's just really incredible.
As someone who played in 99 playoff games, you'd be uniquely qualified to answer this question. Again, Scott Hartnell is our guest. We saw Florida coming off a 9-day layoff, kind of lay an egg to the Boston Bruins in game one last night. It's Colorado who has that long layoff. They go down 3-0. Now they do storm back and beat Dallas. Is there something to the idea of a long layoff coming into a playoff series affecting you in the first game? And it's a particularly appropriate question considering tonight Edmonton's going to be playing with 8 days off before their first game against Vancouver.
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think, you know, the season's, what, 6-7 months, right? And literally you're playing 3 to 4 games a week, right? You hardly practice towards the end of the year, and that's the best part about playoffs, right? You never know if it's going to go into overtime or you get those extra minutes, and, you know, you usually have the next day off. You have a quick morning skate, you play, you know, day off, travel day, you know, morning skate, you play. And then when you have 8, 9, 10 days off, you're like, okay, you got a couple days off, you got to have a couple hard days of practices, you got to keep your mind in it, you know, it's springtime, you want to watch baseball, go for a golf round. It's like, oh man, we're only in round two, right? So mentally it's, you know, tough to check in every time you're at the rink, you know, but it is the playoffs and you're fighting for that Stanley Cup. So there's that part of it too, where it shouldn't affect you that much. But, you know, when you're playing every second day, like Boston just did to Florida, you know, you basically get on a flight literally the next day, don't practice, get out on their morning skate, and then you stomp a good, really good Florida team, you know, in Florida. So it's there's something to be said by just kind of keeping your routine going in and out, you know, playing every second day.
Scott, we really appreciate your time as always. Again, Rostislav Klesla should not have been drafted over you. That was a really poor decision by Columbus. Carlo did fight. Carlo did fight him in junior, so maybe that was,
yeah, that was payback for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Hey, keep boosting my ego. I'll come on every week for you guys.
Right. Now we're talking. That is Scott.
Nice.
Arnold,
that's what we do, buddy.
That is. I did boost Ryan Hollins. I think the kids call it glazing. That's what they call it. Glazing. Wow. I'm shocked Mia and Leo don't use that term. You know, when they're watching YouTube all the time, glazing is a term that the kids use when you're, you know, pumping someone's tires a little bit.
Do you know
much.
What the term megged is?
No. What's that?
It's like a soccer term, like when you put like the ball between somebody's legs to take them out. It's like you got megged. Like,
yeah.
Not megged. I don't know. My kids are telling me this. I'm like, where are you guys learning this?
Your kids are super cool. They know all the terms. All the terms.
Hopefully the appropriate ones.
Like lit, that's fire. Slay, that's another term I've heard.
Slay the dragon.
I start teaching this week as well. And when I started teaching, this is my 7th year, I think. I was like in my mid-20s or my mid to late 20s. So I was still kind of cool. Now I'm an old man. So all these kids coming out of university are probably going to have all new types of terms that I won't understand. It's quite likely. Like TikTok. I do understand TikTok. I love TikTok.
Glizzy?
Yeah, that's a hot dog, right? Maybe we'll do a quiz at some point during the summer about all, like, maybe Mia and Leo can come on and come up with terms, and we need to figure out what they mean. Not in the summertime. They're not in school.
Oh, summertime. Yeah. They'll probably be out by the pool or something.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a PA day coming up soon anyways.
It probably is. Surprised it's been this long since
No worries. We'll find a way to get them on the show. This hour, first up, was brought to you by LeaseBusters. LeaseBusters will get you out of your car lease today. It is as easy as pie, a piece of cake. Avoid penalties and early termination fees. Visit LeaseBusters.com. We'll talk to the nail gun, Dave Naylor, on the 9-game, the minimum of 9 games, suspension for Chad Kelly, the quarterback of the Argos, where the double blue go from here, and what the future of Chad Kelly is in the Canadian Football League, plus some of our conversation with Steve Phillips, perhaps Frank Corrado as well, and my FanDuel best bets. All that's still to come.